Oh my God, what's up, party people? Welcome to this week's episode of Romancing Nancy Drew. I'm your host, Andy Nickerson, which stands for Nancy Drew Nickerson. You can find me at that handle on Twitter. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. Blue sky. I mean, technically, I am still on that abomination, but fingers crossed it's gonna die any second. Oh my God, that's not true. I'm really sad about it not being around anymore. But it's a zombie. Also, at Romancing Nancy on Blue Sky, once I figure out how to fuck to change my profile on my phone so that I can actually post to it. Damn it. Anyway, this week's episode is called Nancy Drew Files number 40, Shadow of a Doubt, which they went with the classic 1989 hot, hot pink and teal combo, which it still slaps. They're doing correct things. The other color that is the most obvious color on this cover is like a really dark slate gray. And it works. I like it. I like how it stands out. Nancy is standing pensively with a pen held to her lips. She is going full blonde this time. And also she's wearing an outfit that she does actually wear in the book. And you know that I have feelings about this. She's wearing like a not quite navy turtleneck. And something else is going on down below, but we don't really know what it is. Maybe something, dark pants. She is talking to a guy who is wearing, he has made the questionable choice of wearing a button down with a cardigan over it. That cardigan is cropped, y'all, and it's only got two buttons at the waist. So it's like, I need to showcase my chest while also making my torso look kind of Dorito-esque. It's a weird, weird sitch. Also, it's brown, and he's doing a lot of neutrals. I'm not a fan of his look. I'm not a fan of him. Well, we're going to talk about it. He looks like he's giving Nancy some sort of, like, newspaper interview where he's like, yes, and I saw what was going on. Because in the background, you see a man who is sprawled on the pavement and a police officer leaning over him like, sir, can I see your license and registration? He's dead. Spoiler alert. Okay. Oh my God. This one. Last week, Suspect Next Door, which I fucking love, is actually like, I've got some questions about the basic plot, but I love a lot about that book. This book, I was like, I don't know. I have like kind of neutral feelings on. And the reason for that is that this plot is absolutely off the fucking wall. Also, Ned does get a mention early on in the book where Nancy's like, yes, he is off at Emerson College and I miss him terribly. Also, early in the book, she best George, her dad, and Hannah all go to Chez Louis, or Chez Lewis, as I would have said it when I was eight, for like just a fancy dinner. Just an interesting fancy dinner. I'm going to back up slightly. I don't even remember, like, the fucking reason for it. I just know that, like, Nancy's friends were over, and Nancy's been getting a lot of crank calls. Like, somebody, she picks up the phone, and somebody's like, and then they'd click. And she's like, huh. And her friends are like, well, if it's Ned, he's going to call back. And Nancy's like, Ned doesn't do weird crank calls. Like, we got a lot going on in our relationship, but they do not involve weird, like, heavy breathing. Like, I'm a serial killer who's going to come get you. Like, our role play has not advanced to that level, and I'm not here for that. Anyway, so she keeps, like, I think, like, it's at least twice, maybe three times before they leave, like, she gets that weird call. And it's nobody. Nothing happens. I think they actually, like, have a nice dinner, and, like, she just casually mentions the phone calls, and her dad's like, huh, and that's it. The interesting thing to me is, first off, Nancy's like, yes, I've been here several times with Ned, and I'm like, yeah, your proposal dinner, which I do love that, like, she still continues to visit the restaurant. Like, apparently, I guess that was written into the Nancy Drew Files Bible for the ghostwriters. But I do love that it's like, and we came back here. We come back here every now and then to commemorate the fact that he proposed to me. And just to talk about, like, I don't know, just spitballing. What would it be like if I'd said yes? Like, I wrote that story. Anyway. So they have their, this is the other fucking weird thing. Like, okay, Hannah goes with them, which again, fine. Absolutely fine. I'm all here for Hannah being along with them because Hannah does a lot of shit for that family. Okay. Oh my God. But Carson, like, she's dressed up and she's like, it's not every day that I get to go out with one of the most handsome men in River Heights. And I'm like, this series has always been real clear about they're not together. But like in this one, like she dresses up, like she looks nice. She's not just like, oh, like Mother of the Bride ain't it. She's like, hell yeah, I'm going to wear some sequins and I'm going to look fab. And also, Carson fucking orders for her. He's like, we will have the steak au poivre. And the waiter's like, very good, sir. And Hannah's like, I do love that. And I'm like, I've got 1,000 follow-up questions. First off, are y'all together? Second, have you come here often? Third, what? Anyway, oh my God. So, Carson and Hannah, a couple for this book? We don't know. Maybe? Anyway, they get home, some, like, shady-ass delivery service, like, some little blonde twink comes to the door and is like, I have a message for Carson Drew. And in it is a, it's like some sort of, like, maybe a publicity photo or something of a guy sitting at a desk, and it's written across it, I know what you did to cover up for this guy, and you're gonna pay, or some shit like that. Nancy's like, okay, tell me everything, because that's exactly what I'm here for, like, my wheelhouse, exactly this situation, she says. And so Carson's like, I don't know. Here's the sitch. 8 years ago, so when Nancy was 10 and she would have been like less aware of what her dad was doing. But also around 10, I feel like she also would have been hyper aware of what her dad was doing. But anyway, he defended a guy named Dennis Allard. I'm going to just mispronounce everybody's names. Anyway, he defended him against charges because Dennis was working at a law firm in the accounting department. His partner, like his assistant, was named Gleason. And both of them were suspected of embezzling. So they, someone sent out doctored invoices to the clients that like said that they owed more money than they did. And when the money came back in, it was like just kind of moved to a separate account and then moved into somebody else's account, into someone else's bank account. So whenever it was like a real basic, like, yes, they were just overcharged for stuff. And then the person just took the money when it came back. So since they were in charge of the department, they were the ones who were suspected. I think there were other people working in the department at the time, but those were the two main suspects, because I guess they were the only ones who could have done it. This is 1989. We're talking about a computer system from approximately 1981. And the way they discuss it in the book is that, A, the firm is still using the same system. B, it's the kind that you would have had to actually, like, type in a directory to access a file. And if you didn't have, like, a directory listing, you weren't going to have any idea that the file was there. So it was very similar to that other case that Nancy did, where she was trying to find that computer thing that was going on where they were, like, selling diplomas. So it's like that, kind of. Anyway, we're going to get to it. I know that you're like, I need to know everything. What language was it written in? What kind of computers were they? And the answer is none of your fucking business. But anyway, so Carson was defending Dennis against the charges, and the other guy, Gleason, got a different lawyer. So Gleason got charged. Like, he actually was convicted of it and he went to prison for 8 years. Dennis was acquitted. So Dennis got off the charges. And the thing says that, like, Carson covered up evidence. And Nancy's like, you wouldn't do that. And Carson's like, no, I wouldn't do that. And he said, as far as I'm concerned, he was innocent. And I want to, this book frustrates me on several thousand levels, but one of the things is that, like, if you're a defense attorney, yes, as far as you are concerned, unless your client, like, admits to you what they did, yeah, they are innocent. Like, you are supposed to defend them as though they are. If there's extenuating circumstances that they want you to talk about, sure, but, like, Carson was not privy to any evidence to the contrary. Carson didn't know of anything like that because, of course, you know, he's an ethical person, which, sure. Anyway, he's a defense attorney. So, the thing is that Gleason has, like, Nancy's like, well, is Gleason still in jail? And Carson's like, maybe. I mean, I don't really know. So she actually has to, like, fucking call up Chief McGinnis the next morning. Oh, also her dad's like, don't you fucking touch this. And Nancy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, I know that you're going to look into it because that's who you are. And I understand that. Don't do it. He said, it's better in my experience if you just leave it alone. Like, it just dies down by itself. You don't need to draw any attention to it. You don't need to do anything about it. Just let it go. Just fucking don't do anything. Don't. And Nancy's like, yeah, like crossing all of her fingers behind her back and possibly toes if her shoes allow it. So, yeah. So she clearly, like, she goes to Chief McGinnis the next day and she's like, hey, my dad, like, wanted me to check on something for him. And Chief McGinnis is like, he actually looks up the information and he's like, Nancy, if I find out later that your dad did not tell you to do this, that's going to look real fucking bad for me. And Nancy's like, yeah, he did tell me to, and yeah, but like, because he's like, you don't want me fucking with this stuff. And Nancy's like, he's usually very accommodating of me, but he also doesn't like being shown up by an 18-year-old. I'm like, both of those things can definitely be true. So Nancy's like, I just want to talk to him, which sounds like as though you're smacking a baseball bat into your other hand. I just want to talk to you about why you're making creepy, breathy phone calls at my dad. Anyway, so she goes to his apartment. Like, of course, because this book is going to drill this all home for you, like, he's living in the rundown section of River Heights. There are three sections of River Heights. One, rundown business adjacent section. Two, where Nancy lives. Three, mansions. Those are your options. Bess and George live where Nancy lives. Like, they're 5 minutes away. It's fine. Anyway. So he lives in the rundown part of town. There's an apartment. There's an apartment complex. When Nancy pulls up, she sees like police cars and an ambulance already out front. And she's like, son of a bitch. So she goes out there and she's like, hey, what? This pissed me off. The detective who's there is Ryan, which, as you know, Irish cop stereotypes. But the other thing is, like, Detective Ryan first appeared in like Circle of Evil when Nancy was investigating the country club. And, like, he grudgingly started, like, saying, okay, Nancy is not full of shit. Like, so he appears in, like, two or three different books. And it's continuous. Like, the continuity is held. In this book, Detective Ryan is like, who are you? And Nancy's like, oh, I'm just a... And he's like, oh, you're okay. Like, as though he's suffered a head wound or he is recently transferred in. And this is not the same guy. So, again, O'Neill, just pick a different random Irish name. Anyway. So, the person that she's there to see, Gleason, has, committed suicide, apparently, and the cops are like, yeah, we're just here, like, picking up that big old corpse, and Nancy's like, did he leave a note? And the cop is like, did you know him? And she's like, no, not really, I'm just nosy, and the cop's like, that tracks, yeah, he left a note, and Nancy's like, okay. So Nancy knows his apartment number from asking Chief McGinnis, so she manages to get into the building and sneak past the cops who are clearly like trying to toss the place, seeing if there's anything else they can find to support their theory of suicide, which again, he left a note and it's a suicide method. So Nancy eventually sneaks into the apartment. I think that she says she didn't. I don't think she does jimmy the lock, actually. I think the cops leave it unlocked or something. Like, occasionally Nancy's like, I did not plan to pick a lock on this trip, so I did not slide that into my miniskirt. Anyway, she gets into the apartment while sneaking past, like, 17,000 cops, and she doesn't find anything. She's like, this place is a shithole. Which, again, he just got out of fucking prison, Nancy. Stop judging people. But, anyway, it's not great. She's like, this place is sad. These books are, like, 0.5 inches from being like, maybe this is not great, but they don't quite make it there. Not quite. She's looking around and she also, like, she hears something outside, like maybe a siren or something. So she goes to the window and moves the curtain aside to see if she can see like any cops coming back in when a notebook falls down off the windowsill. It's just one of those little basic notebooks, little spiral bound things. And she looks at it and she's like, this seems like evidence. And then some cops come up and she like has to haul ass and get out of there. She steals evidence from a potential crime scene. No gloves. No, not even like, maybe I should pick this up with a handkerchief. Like, nope, just gonna put my hands all over it. Yeah, she takes it with her. Outside, she sees that there are two people talking to the cops. This is after she's already been up and like, just, you know, cased the joint. And it's a hot guy and a girl who looks like might be a sister. And they're talking to the cops. And he's like, yeah, we're really sorry. And they're really upset. And apparently it is the recently deceased's son and daughter who are approximately Nancy's age. So their names are Chris and Kate. And Chris is like, again, devastatingly handsome. Okay. Again, I'm going to be casting Archer characters for this for a significant reason. It's going to become obvious later. And at first I was like, he looks kind of like Archer. He apparently has like those really cute green eyes, like really striking green eyes. So maybe kind of like Archer, just with blue eyes instead. But I was like, I'm actually going to say Barry, even though you have dark hair. I'm going to say Barry. You'll see why later. Kate, I don't actually care. She's just super fucking bitter about everything. Just incredibly bitter. One cannot blame her. Her dad has been in prison for 8 years over a crime that he has sworn up and down that he did not commit. So, there's that. The other thing is, like, the money that was taken at the time, like, they never recovered it. Like, apparently it was deposited at the River Heights Bank of Trust and cleaned out, like, the day of the arrest, and they were never able to figure out where it went. So, that's cool. And Nancy's like, well, how did anybody account for that? Like, if he stole it, then why wouldn't he have, you know, come clean about it or something? And they were like, oh, well, he was just gonna put it in a bank account and keep it safe until he had to, like, until he got out of prison, and then he would just be able to spend the money because he would have been released. And they're like, and Nancy's like, okay, yeah, I guess. But, like, it just seems weird to her that, like, they were never able to recover the money. But anyway, so. Chris and Kate are both like devastated. They're like, no, he was happy. He had plans. He was, you know, he was like interested in life. He was not despondent. Like he was looking forward to, you know, doing stuff again. And the cop's like, well, we're really sorry. We found a note. And then Nancy comes over and she's like, hey, I just, heard you two talk. I'm so sorry about your loss. And they're like, oh, who are you? And Nancy's like, oh, my name's Nancy Drew. And Kate immediately is like, Carson Drew's daughter. And Nancy's like, yeah. And Kate's like, I want to set you on fucking fire, you bitch. Like, Kate is not here for this shit. Kate is like, your dad did this. And Nancy's like, my dad defended the other, like, I don't, what the fuck? He didn't hide, no, stop it. And Kate's like, I don't fucking, whatever, what fucking ever. And Chris is like, look, can you help us? Like, I don't know what's going on here, but, like, can you help us figure out what happened to our dad? And Nancy's like, of course I can, because she's been wanting to get on this case since the beginning. Like, clearly, she's like, I'm doing it AMA, against medical orders. So, yeah. Elsa is hot, but the interesting thing here is that, like, there's no flirtation between the two of them. Like, Nancy's like, I mean, he's cute, but Ned. And I'm like, thank you, Ghost Rider. I mean, you did a lot of horrible things to this plot, and if you did Ghost Rider this, please don't listen to this. But anyway, like, you chose correctly on that one. Oh my god, also, like, 17 minutes into this episode, warning for domestic abuse. Have you noticed that that's a thread running through these books? We are on, like, a domestic abuse arc, and I'm wondering if me reading through the rest of these is gonna be me going, oh, it was there the whole time. It was, you know, it was Fight Clubbing it, where you're like, I should have picked up on these hints. I don't know. I don't fucking know. Anyway, spoiler alert. So, Nancy agrees to help, and she's like, okay, well, what can I do to, like, you know, is there anything? And they're like, well, you know, we will help you as much as we possibly can. And Nancy's like, okay. So, Nancy, first off, wants to go back to the firm where the embezzlement took place. So, but again, she has to be kind of, like, low-key about things. Let me think. Shit. Something happens, and I don't remember how exactly it happens, but anyway. So, I think this is how it happens, though. Nancy goes by, and she goes to the firm that, okay, this is another weird thing about this book. Carson Drew has his own practice, okay? They don't really talk about partners that much. He probably does have partners. They don't really talk about other people who work in the office that much, but, like, Carson Drew has his own, like, established place with no name that we're given. It's just, like, he goes to the office. There is a second law firm, and that's where the embezzlement took place. There is a third law firm, and this is where the people who defended the other guy came from. So, like, I'm like, is it just because y'all are so close to Chicago that you can support three law firms in one town that, oh, okay. Or maybe they all specialize in different shit, but that doesn't make sense anyway. Like, I don't even know what they specialize in. Like, no one in this has read a John Grisham book. Perhaps they did not exist at this point. Maybe they were just being written. Anyway. Also, Perry Mason was right out the door. They were not here for actually, like, legal being on track with legal stuff. Anyway, so Nancy goes to the law firm and she's like, hey, I just was curious about, like, is there anybody here who worked here when they did? Is there anybody I can talk to about it? You know, can anything that you can tell me about, anything you can tell me about? I'm just curious. So she talks to the guy who is currently in charge of the accounting department. Actually, he's not in charge of the accounting department. He's in charge of the, like, administration. So I guess, like, the clerical side of the administration. His name is Nicodemus. I've always had a negative association with this name. I do not know why. So anyway, bad guy. That's immediately what I thought. And I was like, oh, no, it's, I don't know. I don't remember. It's fine. I've read this book before, but I have no recollection of what the fuck's going on. He takes Nancy to the accounting department where Cheryl works. That's why I had to be Archer. So yeah, go ahead and picture Cheryl. It's fine. But look her up if you're not familiar with Archer. Cheryl. So Cheryl has only been working there for about a month, and she is working in the accounting department. She's doing the, she graduated recently from junior college, and this is like her first job. And so she's like really, cautious and really wants to keep it and really wants to keep her bosses happy, etc. So like when Nicodemus is like, oh, I think his first name is Peter. I don't fucking care. His name is Nicodemus now. He was like, oh, Cheryl, talk to Nancy about, you know, how our system is set up. Cheryl tells Nancy that everyone knows about the clients who were at the firm at the time. Like, everyone knows who they are. Like, it's company gossip all over the place. Their accounting system, again, is still the same accounting system as they were using back then. They probably have installed updates, but it's like the same basic framework and equipment, I guess, or servers. And like, she's been going through and trying to like clean out old stuff. And she tells Nancy, oh, all that stuff's gone. We don't know where it is anymore. Yeah, it's, we don't know. All the stuff from back then was gone. The cops came and collected it all. I don't know what else you expect to find. And Nancy's like, okay, that's fine. And then she, like, I think she gives Nancy a card, because of course Nancy has fucking business cards, where she's like, Nancy Drew, amateur detective. And she's like, contact me if you think of anything else. Nancy's also been looking through the little notebook that she found in the apartment, and she's not really able to make out what it is. She thinks it's like a date book, but it like says like who he was talking to, but not like what he found out at those meetings. So she's like, he did go back to the firm and talk to people. She does see that. And that's another thing that Cheryl says. She's like, yeah, the guy that you're talking about, Gleason, came back here like a week ago. And Nancy's like, oh, what did he ask about? And she's like, same things you did. So Nancy goes home. I think it's around this point, actually, that Nancy sees that she's being pursued by a silver late model sports car. And she's like, huh. So eventually, while she plays like cat and mouse and tries to get away from them, the car runs her off like an on-ramp. So her Mustang is headed straight for some trees. Like, she's like, oh, I'm going to die. Like, there's no way that I'm going to survive this crash. So she actually like ejects herself from the car. Like, she unbuckles her belt and opens her door and like rolls out of the car before her car crashes into some trees. Like, she's like, yeah, I would have died. That's absolutely what it did. Like, she hitchhikes back to town and gets the car towed, and she's like, how long is it going to take for my car to get fixed? And they're like, 2 weeks at minimum. And she's like, okay, rental car. Her dad, of course, is like, huh, because, like, clearly there would have had to be a fucking, like, insurance, I guess. There would have had to be, like, a fucking insurance claim at this point or whatever the fuck. And, like, he's not like, what were you doing? And Nancy's not like, oh, I was just driving and something weird like, oh, my God. Anyway. So the beloved Mustang is in the shop. Should have been totaled. I can't imagine how it wasn't totaled at this point. Also, it's kind of funny that like 2 books ago, somebody else also totaled a Mustang. We're just totaling Mustangs. So she's like, clearly somebody wants me off this case. Like, my dad is right to be telling me that I need to stay the fuck away from this case. So that's cool. But when she goes home after, like almost as soon as she gets home after she's talked to Cheryl. So I think that I'm not sure exactly, like, how much the sequence of events, because you know how I am. I forget everything. Anyway, almost as soon as she gets home after talking to Cheryl, Cheryl comes by her house and is like, I'm really sorry. I didn't want to say this at the office because I feel like people are listening. But the guy who came by, I found a report and I gave it to him. And Nancy's like, a report of what? And Cheryl's like, a report of the embezzlement. Like, I found a list of the like duplicate books or whatever that were fucking made. The ones that were different from the ones that we've got in the actual office. And I made a printout. And I gave them to him. And Nancy's like, you made a fucking printout. Do you still have it? And she's like, no, I gave it to him. Nancy's like, okay, can you print it out for me? And she says, no, he told me to delete it. And I did. And Nancy's like, son of a fucking bitch. And Cheryl's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like sobbing and everything. And Nancy's like, okay, it's okay. It's okay. You gave him a printout though. And it wasn't at his place. Okay. Thank you for telling me. Because, again, Cheryl is, like, all over the place. Hot mess in it. It's bad. So, Nancy calls her friends in, and she's like, Bess, you follow this suspect. George, you follow this suspect, and we're going to see what's going on. And they're like, yeah, we're on it. Yeah. Because mall. Yeah. Another thing is that Kate and Chris, the son and daughter of the recently released from prison deceased guy, like, their life was hard. Their dad got sent to prison. Their mom had to raise him by herself, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, you'd be like, huh, okay. But the thing is that, like, when either Bess or George is following Kate around, because Nancy feels sus about Kate, she actually finds out, like, during that first interview that Kate was the one making the phone calls. I think, she might have gone back to talk to him again, and she was like, somebody was making crank phone calls to my house, Kate. And Kate's like, I don't know what you're talking about. And Chris is like, what the fuck? So Kate tells Nancy that her dad had said, like, this is what happened. Carson Drew hid evidence. There was evidence hidden in that first trial, and I'm going to reveal it because I'm not guilty. I'm not responsible for what happened. Side note, I was like, why the fuck would you be bringing this up now? You've already served your sentence. Like, it's been 8 years. And I think that partially it's the whole, like, clearing my name so that I can actually be gainfully employed because everybody thinks that I'm shit with money. But also, like, what the fuck would he have done in prison? I think it would have been really super interesting if he had contacted Carson Drew while he was in prison and said, hey, I know that you represented the other guy, and that, like, there probably Carson's strategy was to blame everything on the other guy. You know, here's my theory of the case. But, like, he apparently doesn't make any protestation of innocence that leads to anything while he's in prison. So he has to wait until he's out to start pursuing it, to do his own investigation, etc. So anyway, I think that's interesting. But Kate's like, yeah, dad told me that, like, he was innocent and all this stuff, and I wanted to help him. And I thought that maybe if I could, like, startle him into doing something, that maybe that would be helpful. Like, again, like, Kate and Nancy are really fucking similar in this, because Kate's like, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes to help my dad. And Nancy's like, same, but on the other side. So there's that. So Kate was making the crank phone calls. I think Kate also had the picture delivered that was like, I know what you did. And Nancy's like, you're being real ham-fisted about all this, girl. Real ham-fisted. It's fine, but just, Anyway, the other thing that happens, and I think this is when Nancy's talking to Nicodemus, who, you know, have negative feelings toward, I think that he tells Nancy that he will contact the law firm that represented the Gleason originally. I think that that's what happens. I think he talks to him and he's like, I can talk to him for you. I think. Okay. There's so many fucking meetings in this, and Nancy sees so many, like, secretaries at one point. She's like, okay, I'm just going to pretend to be a secretary and sneak into this building. And it works with no problems whatsoever because, like, there's so many fucking secretaries in this book. Anyway, so Nicodemus is like, yeah, I'll call and see if I can get you a meeting with the attorney who represented the other guy. Because, again, there's at least three law firms in this town. So Nancy goes over to their law firm, and she talks to the guy who she doesn't like very much, but he's not her dad, so. He's like, oh, Nancy Drew, huh, what did you want to talk to me about? And Nancy's like, the case, Gleason. And he's like, you know, I can't talk to you about that. Nancy's like, but, I mean, I'm trying to help my dad and blah, blah. And he's like, he just looks at her, and he's like, I can't help you. Like, I legally can't help you. I think you know that. And the other thing that he tells her, he's like, but I can get you in to talk to the DA. This is the thing that happens when she's talking to everybody. Like, her dad knows what he's saying. She shouldn't be fucking doing this, and there's a really important reason why. And when she's talking to the lawyer, like, and I think it's the lawyer who originally represented Gleason. He's like, look, anything that you find out, you can be subpoenaed over. And if it represents your dad badly, you still have to tell the truth about it. And Nancy's like, but my dad didn't do anything wrong. And he's like, anything that sheds a negative light on your dad, if you find out about it, you're going to have to testify about it. And Nancy's like, because she hadn't thought this through. And her dad, again, had thought this through. And she's like, well, I'm going to take that chance because my dad's a good guy. And he's like, okay. Yeah, he doesn't tell her much because he can't tell her much. But he does tell her that, like, they never recover the money. The guy who originally Carson represented, the one who apparently, like, he was supposedly hiding evidence over, is currently working at River Heights Bank and Trust. And so Nancy goes over to see him, and he is giving halo over his head, never done a damn thing wrong, full head of hair. Just killing it. Giving Michael Norrie. He's like, oh, I was just so sorry about what happened to him. Like, you know, it was really sad. But yeah, he's definitely like, Nancy's like, I don't think he did it. Look at him. Look at him. So sincere. Look at those shiny eyes. Just, oh. And he's also like working at the bank. He has an office. He's not like the highest executive there, but he's clearly gotten up there. And Nancy's like, oh, that's interesting. Okay. And I think it's not during that trip she finds out that this is another stop that he made on his trip, when he was making all the rounds of everything before the quote-unquote suicide, which you know by now it's not, that he went to the bank. And Nancy's like, why would he have fucking gone to the bank? Why would he have gone to the bank? So she goes to the bank. She's like, hey, you know, did he talk to the people in accounting? And he did. And so Nancy's like, okay, can I talk to the people in accounting that he talked to? And the guy who's there, Allard, is like, yeah, you can talk to him this way. So, she talks to the guy and she's like, you know, can you tell me anything about what he found out? And he was asking questions about the closed out account and if they had any information about where it was transferred to, et cetera. And no, they didn't have it. If they did have it, they wouldn't have revealed it to him, et cetera. So Nancy's like, okay, well, that makes sense. He's trying to find out where the money went to see if he can find out, like, you know, who was responsible for this. That's fine. So, the other thing, and I think that she starts suspecting, oh shit, let me back up. Where the fuck did Nancy see Brenda? Nancy sees Brenda at some point during this, of course, because Brenda is like this little gremlin who just pops up occasionally. Or in that one book, somebody who is sympathetic and deserves to be treated with respect. But in any other book, she's just a little gremlin who's there to give Nancy like one or two tidbits. So in her paper, it says that the DA is bringing charges against Carson on suspicion of him hiding evidence in a trial, which is exactly what Nancy was worried about and what Carson was like, we need to just wait for it to blow over. And Nancy's like, what the fuck is going on? So she goes to talk to the DA because of course she fucking does. And again, Carson's like, Nancy, please. Oh my God, please. And Nancy's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm great. Anyway, the DA is like, yeah, if you find out anything, again, you've been told this, I'm going to subpoena you. I'm going to find out what you have found out about. Like, you need to know that. And Nancy's like, do you have, like, enough evidence to bring charges against my dad? And the DA's like, no, we don't right now. We're investigating. But you need to know that. And Nancy's like, okay. Nancy ends up following, and I think that she eventually decides that, based on all the evidence that she has, that the dead guy was right, that he didn't do the embezzling, that the other guy must have, because he was the one who made the most sense, that he had to have been involved in it. And so I think she follows him, or maybe, no. Anyway, she ends up going to this big, like, apartment. It's not an apartment building. It's like a business apartment building. It's a multi-business building. Anyway, so she goes in there and she's like, she's following one of her suspects. And I think that it's actually Nicodemus at that point. Nicodemus was in charge of the accounting department, remember? And Nicodemus also got rid of everybody else who was working in the accounting department. And Nancy was like, huh, why would you do that? He was like, I think they really liked the way I handled it because they promoted me. And Nancy's like, you also got rid of anybody who could have testified against you, is what you did. So that's fun. Anyway, she follows him out to that business apartment building. And she's not sure why he's there, but she makes a list of all the different organizations who have, like, a mailbox or whatever that goes to that place. So she's got the name of it and everything. And she's like, oh, I just, whenever he runs into her, she's like, oh, I love the way they do my nails at this one salon that is in this little strip mall. Anyway, so Nancy goes to the library, as one does, in 1989, and she's like, hey, how do I find out who owns this building? And the librarian is like, girl. He pulls out, like, fucking, I don't know. Actually, what he probably would have pulled out was tax records, but anyway, he's like, who owns what? It's just this big, I was like, no, property tax records, hon. Property tax records, which are a public record you can look up. But probably would have been at, like, another location. Anyway, whatever the fuck. Anyway, they find out that of all the places, Nancy's like, I'm trying to find out if any of these are linked to any of my suspects. There is one who she's like, is it Aladdin? Aladdin sounds like the names of two of my suspects jammed together, but it is not Aladdin. It is Convex Corporation, is owned by two of her suspects, Allard and Nicodemus. And she's like, yes, this is what happened to the money. They used this money to invest in this whatever shell corporation, storefront. What, I don't know what's going on there. I don't actually even know either. I'm going to just say that. I don't know either. I don't know what's going on at that place. They never tell you. Is it a front for human trafficking? Is it like they're figuring out how slots work? I don't know. I don't know. Go-kart batteries? We don't know. Anyway, Nancy actually, like, I think that she follows Cheryl, and as soon after she talks to Cheryl, and Cheryl's like, I found this information, blah, blah. And Nancy's like, okay, thank you for telling me. She follows Cheryl. Cheryl goes to the apartment building where the dead guy lived, and Nancy's like, what the fuck? So she follows her inside, and she goes to the apartment where she sees Chris, Barry, with Cheryl. Like, she can hear raised voices in there. It sounds like they're having a fight. Nancy's like, well, I'm gonna have to go in there. And when she opens the door, she sees, like, Chris has Cheryl up against the wall and looks like he's about to start choking her. And Nancy's like, what the fuck? And she, like, flies over there and, like, knocks him on his ass. And she's like, what the fuck are you doing? And Chris is like, I remember, like, he looks really, really pissed. And Cheryl's crying and everything. And he's like, Nancy's like, what the fuck's going on? So Cheryl tells Nancy that she and Chris have been dating for, like, since high school. Like, whenever Nancy sees Kate around the same time, Kate's like, yeah, they've been dating since high school. Chris has wanted to do this for so fucking long that he got Cheryl involved, got Cheryl to go to school so that she could get the degree that she needed so that she could start working in accounting so that she could go there and see if she could find any evidence about his dad. And I was like, that is fucked up. Oh my God. To get your girlfriend and be like, hey girl, hey, if you love me, I'm not saying we're going to do it, but we probably are. But also, can you go get an accounting degree? Because I work on foreign cars. That he's a foreign car mechanic. And he's like, oh my God. Nancy goes by to see him at his work. And she's like, I need to talk to you because he's been a dick. And he's like, I'll be right there. It's a really tough day at the shop. I'm the only one here. And so he goes over to work on a Porsche, and the Porsche, like, falls off the air compressor. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Cars are run by elves as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, the car falls down off the lift thingy and almost, like, decapitates him. And Chris is like, son of a bitch. And Nancy's like, yeah, somebody slashed through the air hose. So somebody wants you dead. You want to talk to me? Do you want to talk to me, you punk-ass bitch? Anyway, so, he is also a choky little rage head and is like, I'm just really tense about my dad. And Nancy's like, he's dead now. Don't choke your fucking girlfriend over it. That needs to be consensual. Anyway, so, Cheryl's like, yeah, he's just changed and blah, blah, but, you know, I love him. And Nancy's like, okay, for the, like, nth time in this fucking series, can y'all stop dating domestic abusers? I'm putting, this is 1989. Is this standard? Are we to believe that this is just, like, how things are if you are a teenager in 1989. Like, you're going to get slapped and choked. I'm not here for it. I'm not here for it. And that's why Ned, again, is a perfect little star beam. Anyway, so after all this, like, choking and raging out and everything and finding out that we have a shadow corporation, blah, 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 Nancy follows one of these assholes to somewhere. And I think it might be actually, like, Nicodemus's place where he works. I think she tries to sneak into his office to see if she can find any information about, like, anything. You know, any clues. She doesn't find anything, sadly, because she gets chased out of the office first. She poses as a person who was there to clean the offices, and no one questions it. Nancy's like, yeah, I got this shit. All you have to do is pretend to be domestic help, and nobody gives any sorts of fucks. Or clerical help, actually. So, Nicodemus sees her and chases her with a gun and tries to shoot her in the, like, stairwell. And Nancy, like, was taking the stairs, like, three at a time, holding onto the railing so she doesn't, like, fall and die. And she also, like, vaults over the railing at one point, comes down really hard on her knee, and is like, oh, shit, I'm gonna feel that in the morning. And I was like, girl, you're gonna need knee replacement by your time you're 30. I'm just saying, you need to calm down. You need an exoskeleton. You need an Iron Man outfit. Anyway, so... oh, shit. Slight break. Oh, my God, where were we? Okay, so, I think that what happens is, Nancy's dad is finally like, look, I'm feeling a little bit nervous about all this. Yes, I do want you to be looking into this as much as you can. Nancy asks if he knows anything else, and he's like, no, I don't know anything else, but, you know, just in case. Nancy decides she wants to meet up with everybody, so she sets up a meeting at the apartment with the Chokey McRagehead and his girlfriend / accountant lady, and the girlfriend, and I think somebody, no, that might be it, I think. Anyway, so she's like, okay, I figured this out. The reason that your dad went to the bank is not only to see if they could track the account, which he was pretty sure they probably couldn't, but to take that printout of the evidence that he had and put it in a safe deposit box. So Nancy calls the DA, and I think that the DA is actually like, hang on, I can't talk to you right now because we figured out that the suicide note was forged. And Nancy's like, son of a bitch. So she hands up the phone and she's like, guys, the suicide note was forged. And Caitlin's like, I knew it! I fucking knew it! My dad did not kill himself! And Nancy's like, on the one hand, yes, you're correct. On the other hand, still fucked up. So, then she calls the DA back, and he's like, because he's like, now we're gonna have to find out who killed the dad. She's like, okay, so we figured out there's evidence in the death, and it's in a, deposit box at the bank. And one of the kids is going to have to go with him to get the evidence out of the deposit box. The other thing is that Nancy's like, and BT Dubs, I took something from the crime scene. And the DA is like, you fucking did what? And Nancy's like, I found a notebook. And the kids have, like, basically authenticated it and said that it was the kind of date book that their dad would have used. So, and he's like, okay, I can't believe you. You need to turn in the morning. And I was like, I love that they're like, I don't know, I'm going to give you 12 more hours. So Nancy actually makes a copy of it because, of course, she fucking does. Like, she finds a similar notebook and makes a copy of it. She also gives it to Chris so that Chris can see if he can determine anything. And Chris, of course, is like, I'm sorry, I tried to shoot my girlfriend out. I was just real mad. And Nancy's like, that's not a valid reason, you dipshit, but here's some evidence. Anyway, so he can't figure out anything either, but Nancy turns in the notebook and they go to the bank in the morning and they find the printouts and give those to the DA, so they got everything they need. They just have to figure out who it is. And Nancy's like, I'm pretty sure that it's either Nicodemus or Allard or both of them, because they both own that building. So yeah, we should probably figure that out. I think they end up back at the apartment because they want to, like, I think that's where they are, like, talking over what they found out, when Nancy calls her dad. I cannot remember how the fuck this happens, okay? Like, I think that she knows that her dad's home or some shit. Anyway, but I don't know. Anyway, there's a knock at the door. The door busts open. It's her two suspects with her dad. They have kidnapped her dad. Like, he got a note or some shit. Anyway, they got him tied up between them. And the two bad guys are like, okay, bitches, here's how it's going to be. We're going to tie all y'all up and we're going down to the basement. And Nancy and her two accomplices. Okay, so at this point, it's actually Kate, Chris, and also Cheryl is with them. They're like, we got to get rid of Cheryl too. Cheryl knows too much. So they take all of them. They tie up everybody. And Nancy's looking at her dad and she's like trying to do like the whole like communication that she does with Ned. Because again, like there's a lot of overlap between the way she interacts with Ned and her dad, not in a creepy sex way, where she's like, okay, are you ready to take advantage of any opening we have? And he gives her back with his eyes, yes, of course. And so Nancy's like, okay, we got this. Then she looks over at the other people and they're like just like sobbing messes, and she's like, no, not any help from that angle. So the two bad guys take them down to the basement of the building. Oh my God, this is so, so bad. They take him down to the basement. There, I was like, is there an incinerator? How is this going to play out? But there's like a room full of trash, like old mattresses. I don't know. Anyway, so they take him in that room and they're like, okay. And also they have a gas can. I was like, what the fuck? Do they have like an enormous Mary Poppins carpet bag where they're like, yes, we have gasoline and also like clothesline and also two plus guns and like plus with gasoline. You're making some weird choices, guys. Anyway, so they take him into that room. They've got the gasoline and they've also got at least two guns, and they're like, okay. So they look at Chris, the choking out hothead, and they're like, hey, all right, you got to shoot Nancy and her dad, or we're gonna shoot your girlfriend and your sister. Oh my God. Before this point, like Chris tried to like knock one of them out, so they like elbowed him in the back of the head. They did the people's elbow. Oh my God. Nancy also, holy shit, I forgot this. I'm so sorry. Okay, remember when Nancy was in the stairwell and she like fucked up her knee? She was like, I'm not gonna get out of here. So she actually like fakes that she runs out the door, and then she waits for Nicodemus to come down the stairs, trips him while he's coming down the stairs. He sprawls on the landing, and before he can get up, she like smashes him between the shoulder blades and he stays down. And I was like, so she could have killed him, because I was imagining her doing this with the point of her elbow, but I don't think she does. I think she just like smashes him, like karate chops him or some shit. I don't know. Anyway, I'm sorry. Is this payback for that? I don't know. Anyway, Chris tries to tackle one of them. They knock him out with the butt of the gun. I was like, again, you got guns. I love how in Nancy Drew books, the only way that you can use a gun is the butt of the gun. You can smash somebody with it. Or the other one, which is you are somebody's trying to wrestle the gun away from you and it goes off wildly. Those are the two ways that one can use a gun in a Nancy Drew book, basically. Anyway. So he's coming back around. He's kind of groggy. And again, all choky and hot-headed. And they're like, okay, you got to shoot Nancy and her dad. And I was like, and then they hand him a gun to tell him to do this. I was like, this is so fucking easy. Shoot both of them. Shoot both of them. Oh my God. Somebody has you fucking hostage. And they're like, if you don't shoot them, I'm going to hand you a gun. If you don't shoot them. And you're like, oh, okay. Y'all get down. Y'all get down. Okay. I'm just trying to aim. Oh my God. Anyway. And they're like, what are you going to do? Burn this place down? And they're like, probably. Yeah. I don't know. Like, and Nancy's like, don't do it. They're just going to kill all of us. I'm dying. I'm fucking dying. Anyway. Chris, I think, like, throws the gun, which is probably the dumbest thing to do with a gun at this point. The other thing is that, like, Carson manages to get the upper hand on the people who've got him. Cheryl, who you're like, forgot you were even there. Cheryl found a butter knife in a box and cut her ropes off. I was like, I'm questioning everything about that entire sentence. Everything about it. A butter knife. Oh my gosh, she cut so many. I was like, if a butter knife can get your, what are you even doing? Just look at them harshly and they'll fall off, because oh my God. Anyway, yeah. They overpower the two bad guys. I can't remember. I don't think the cops turn up at that point. I think that, like, they have to call the cops at that point. I was like, yeah, y'all need to sit on them or knock them the fuck out or some shit. Anyway, so, and that's the end of it. I think that Nancy actually goads one of them into admitting who did it. And I think that, I think Nicodemus is the one who actually, like, threw him out the window. The original dead guy. The dead guy from the beginning of the book. The other weird thing is that, like, I can't even remember, like, Nancy starts some sort of fight between them because she's like, oh, he said that he didn't trust you or some shit like that. Like, one of them is like, I can't believe that you would say that about me or something. And Nancy's like, yeah, let's take advantage of this situation. Like, it's just, they're so painfully bad. They're just so painfully bad as bad guys. You're like, it's shocking that you got away with it for this long because y'all are just not cut out for this. Y'all think you bad and you're not baddies. You're just not baddies. Oh my God. You're just incompetent at every level. How did you even get away with the embezzlement? Oh my God. Anyway, so. Hooray! Like, nobody actually, like, I don't know, disciplines Chris for his bad behavior. Carson's name is cleared. No charges were ever actually brought against him. Even, and again, Carson was unaware of any evidence to the contrary, didn't know that any, you know, he didn't know that he was defending a guilty guy, and also, like, defense attorneys are not limited to defending only innocent people, so he does make it sound like if he'd known that he was guilty, he wouldn't have defended him, which is not really the way that works. Like, it's the way that the, like, shows want you to think that it works, but it's like, somebody can be guilty and somebody can still put forward a good defense. Oh my God, just watch, like, two Perry Mason TV shows, and then we'll show you about this, where Carson's like, my client will not tell me what happened. I have every reason to believe that they did this. But I'm going to defend them to the highest degree, and they end up innocent, yes, but Carson, listen to me. But Perry's like, hey, you know, it's you, like, I'm here to defend you, like, you are legally entitled to representation that can defend you in court and present a good alternative theory of the crime, so, boom, I'm your guy, so, anyway. Oh my God. Okay, so Nancy needs reconstructive knee surgery. She also needs a new Mustang. Her dad is just, I don't know, this book definitely makes it sound like Carson is not able to do anything on his own behalf about this. And I was like, again, which seems like the more adult thing here, but Nancy is very much like, no, I gotta clear your name and you didn't do this and blah, blah. A lot of this is like, I need to be the adult here. And Nancy goes against her dad, like, I think three separate times where he's like, I am telling you, do not do this. And she's like, okay, but she, like, justifies it. There's one point that she's like, I stayed up all night and thought about it, and I came to the decision that, like, if this helps him, that he'll forgive me. And I'm like, but what if it doesn't? Like, what if you find out there's something that he, like, should have discovered, or that he just kind of gave an alternate theory? Like, anyway. But again, this book and legal reality and Perry Mason reality are not overlapping significantly in most ways, so there's that. Nancy does like the DA, though. She thinks he's cool. Like, not in a sexy way. He's an old guy, but she's like, yeah, you seem like a pretty decent guy. So, that's nice. Anyway. I was like, also, if we're talking Chicago, Cooks County doesn't have a DA. They have a state's attorney, but, I mean, it's fine because I've delved way too much into Illinois government for any reasonable person. For reasons. Okay. Yeah. Oh my God. So many Archer characters. Mostly Barry and Cheryl, which makes a lot of sense for this. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh. Chris is, nobody actually comes out of this looking good. I'm going to be honest with you. Nobody. Even the dead guy. Like, he's, I don't know. The dead guy just seemed kind of bitter, but also, like, hopeful that he was going to solve this crime within 2 weeks of his release, which does not speak well of his defense attorney. It really makes it feel like everybody was in on it and everybody, like, was conspiring against him, which, hey, maybe so. I don't know. And the notebook that produced no clues. So, yeah, Nancy was like, I wish I could find a clue in here, but there absolutely isn't any. And I was like, I do appreciate that we're not doing the whole, like, unity of action thing where it's like, anything you find must be a valid clue, where she's like, it's just basically giving me a list of all the places he went, which is useful, but, like, it's not telling me who did it. So, that's fun. Anyway. Okay. Next time, we are going to finish with the last six books of the original Nancy Drew Mystery Stories. It's going to be a wild ride, y'all. It's going to be wild. I don't even remember what the next one that we've got in line is. But I do know that Glowing Eye is coming up. And I do know that 13th Pearl and Sky Phantom and Crocodile Island, which I'm not sure if I've ever actually read the last two. I'm not sure if I read Crocodile Island or 13th Pearl. So that's going to be fun for all of us. I have read Glowing Eye. I'm real fucking excited about that one. Yeah. What else do we have left? We're going to figure it out. It's going to be good. It's going to be good though. Anyway, as always, if you're in a domestic abuse situation, get out of it. That's what Nancy tells everybody. Hey, get away from that asshole. Just walk the fuck away. Don't let him emotionally blackmail you. Don't let him try to choke you out in his dead dad's apartment. Unless you've got consent happening, none of those things are okay. So walk the fuck away from that situation, which, you know, maybe if there had been a hotline listed, a hilariously out of date hotline. So stay the fuck out of that shit. And as always, stay sleuthing, my friends.